as Elizabeth has talked about this week, those of you who are connected with me on Facebook will know that I also have had a week of privileged complaints. This was a difficult week because my electric toothbrush died, and for a split second, I forgot that you can actually move it up and down and still brush your teeth. This was a week when I put my work clothes, i.e. my yoga pants, in the washing machine, and the washing machine that has served me well since this condo was built in the 70s, gave up the ghost. And I forgot that I am from a long line of women who have washed clothes by hand long before there was an automatic washing machine. And I was grateful that my dad taught me how to wring the water out of a towel, out of a washcloth, almost until it's dry. I almost didn't need the dryer. Yeah, almost. Still had to put them in the dryer. Thursday, drove to Philadelphia to do some church business, and a quarter mile from my house, the transmission in my car gave up the ghost. So I'm just here to say the refrigerator is still running. The microwave still works. The computer has not died. Thanks be to God. But this week has brought some challenges. This week has brought some things that have taken me away from being swept up in some of the other things that have also brought me grief this week. I've also gotten at least 12 text messages a day reminding me to do my civic duty. I've been solicited for funds for those who are running for office. I have been reminded that Philadelphia is the city of brotherly love, but sometimes we forget who our brothers are. And so this has been a week. This has been a week that I would really, really like to forget, but this is the Sunday when the church calendar calls us to remember, and not only to remember all of the good that has happened, but to remember all that has happened, all that has shaped us, all that has kept us holding on to our faith when there's nothing else we can hold on to. So this day when we remember those who've gone through far worse than we have, this day when we remember those who have spoken words to us to encourage us, to push us through, this day we remember what it looks like to live out our faith. So even if we find the COVID death toll and the infection rate at the top of our newsfeed, even if some of our appliances and some of our conveniences should slip away, even if we find ourselves constantly nudged by others' anxieties, even in the midst of all of that, we are reminded that these are just the times in which we live. These are not just historical facts. These are moments that will try our faith, that will test our faith. And these are moments where we can live and we can prove that we do have faith. We are a people of faith. Now, some would suggest that in order to get through difficult times, you just have to engage in the power of positive thinking. Self-help gurus have told us for as long as I can recall that when the going gets tough, the tough get going. All we have to do is turn that frown upside down and every little thing will be all right. Now, I would agree, positive thinking does have its merits and it does have its benefits, but I would argue that any person who dares to write a self-help book just needs to live in Philadelphia for 5 good years before they're allowed to go to print. Dr. Norman Vincent Peale wrote the popular book, The Power of Positive Thinking, from an Ohio setting. Dr. Angela Lee Duckworth, who, by the way, grew up in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, but taught at University of Pennsylvania, wrote a book with a different title and wrote a book with a different focus. Her book and her research were centered on grit. And I believe there's a certain mascot who represents a Philadelphia team whose name reminds us that in order to survive in Philly, you need more than positive thinking. You're going to need a little bit of grit. There's an option to move through life with a positive attitude, but there is a notion that life in Philly requires a little bit more. But what does a life of faith require? What does All Saints Day really ask us to reflect on as we think about a year that has been filled with more threats than opportunities? I would offer that the saints are the ones who are sustained in good times and in bad times by the power of God and not merely the power of positive thinking. These are the ones sustained by the grit of the gospel and not merely a personal passion. As Elizabeth said, these are the ones who get through because we have hope. And so how can we, the people of God in Philadelphia and vicinity, live up to the expectation that is celebrated in the text? I would offer that the first step is to hear the call to avoid the temptation to get too cozy with Rome. In the text, Rome is literally the Roman Empire. It is the proclaimed savior of the people. It is the establishment that pretends to offer a peace, but it offers a peace that it does not even possess. It merely seeks loyalty from the citizens and the proclamation that Caesar is Lord. The saints are those who have stood and boldly declared that Jesus is Lord and not Caesar. Now that sounds very simple. It sounds tweetable. It sounds easy enough to do. But in that particular time, those who were hearing this message for the first time understood that they could have lost their very lives if they stood up and said that anyone other than Caesar was Lord. What does that look like for us in 2020? For some, this is a question better asked outside of church because it interferes with the feel-good moment that worship offers. I would argue that this text is a call to recognize that though we have this good news, though we have this loving community, though we have this wonderful, uplifting worship music, we are still called to live in both places at the same time. We are called to gather and pray and sing and pass the peace, but we are also called to pay attention to the ways in which life outside the sacred moment on Sunday is impacted by the institutions that are on the outside. We were in a finance meeting this past week, and we were reviewing the church's investments, and the leaders of this congregation, those we will affirm in just a little while, were reviewing the church's investments. We know that we need to invest the money. We need a return on the investment for the church to be viable and for the church to do her business. However, our leaders were carefully reviewing the types of investments that we have. Our leaders made sure that we were not investing in the kinds of things that, although they would bring a higher return on our investment, they would harm humankind. The finance committee did the work of wrestling with where and how we are complicit with the goals of empire. Rome would say, get all you can and can all you get. Rome would say it is best to go ahead and invest in the places that will give you the best yield for your little investment. The gospel says, as you have done to the least of these, you have also done to me. So when we invest in things that harm mankind in the process, we also invest in things that are harming God as it harms God's people. This is a cautionary tale. This is a sign that there is a temptation to do what seems popular, what seems wise, what seems like it will give you the best return for your dollar. But the dollar is not all that we are investing. We are investing our lives and putting them in the hands of God. And what we hope for in return is that we would be able to say, these are the ones who have withstood the great ordeal. These are the ones who have been washed in the blood of the Lamb. And for some, thinking about the blood of the Lamb is very difficult. It's very gory. Well, what about the violence in the text? This is not an image that is used to think of in a violent manner. This is an image that is used to think of as a sacrificial manner. This is an image that harkens back to how we are able to give back to God. We were invited to give back to God through the sacrifice of animals. And so when Christ became the Lamb, the sacrificial Lamb, it is not a bathing in the blood. It is really living in a life that has been made available to us because the final sacrifice has been made. So we don't need to shed our blood or any others to get closer to God. We simply stand with those who are worshiping at the throne. We stand with those who say it might not have worked out according to the world's economics, but it worked out according to God's mathematics. There is a temptation to do what seems popular. There is a temptation to do what seems the best interest of the culture. But when we run that temptation through the lens of the gospel, how does it stand up to what God is asking us to do and how God is going to ask us to account at the final day? I don't know about you, but I would rather have a good account with God than have a good account with an accountant who may not know God. A second choice that the saints face is tied to the first. Though it is difficult to do, we must do the things that are consistent with the choice to affirm that Jesus is Lord and not Caesar. This would have been more blatant in the time of the text, since Rome claimed lordship over people's lives. What would it look like in the lived experience to say with every choice and with every decision that Jesus is Lord? For some, it feels like running the risk of being labeled a Jesus freak or a holy roller. For some, it feels like shaming those who don't carve out time on Sundays for communal worship. For some, it feels like the guilt that accompanies the hesitation to pray before eating a meal in public. What is the thing that we hesitate to do because it might make others think that our devotion to God is merely performative or theatrical rather than deeply theological? The saints in the text had gone through the Great Tribulation. This text could be read in any era in American or world history, and it would be easy to say, oh yes, this was the time of great tribulation. I'm sure that some upon the taking of their land would have said, this is the time of great tribulation. I'm sure that some who had come to this land enslaved would say, this surely is the time of great tribulation. I'm sure that those who sent their loved ones off to war would have said, surely this is the time of great tribulation. I'm sure that when the planes hit the towers, some said, this is the time of great tribulation. I'm sure that all of those who remember their loved ones on Veterans Day will think back and wonder, was that the time of great tribulation? Those who have lived through the past three decades can say of any day, of any of those decades, surely this is the time of great tribulation. We could do all of that comparative history seeking, but all we have is this moment. All we have are these current tribulations. One more news cycle of competing narratives around police-related shootings of a particular kind of particular Philadelphia resident and the subsequent uprisings that follow. For some, the protesting is the work of the saints. For some, the protest of injustice is the work that says clearly there's something is amiss in Romadelphia. For some, this is the work that calls us to figure out what is the root of the problem. For some saints, they simply say, if we had more tasers and better trainings, we wouldn't get to this place. For some, this is merely a time of tribulation because they have nowhere to turn. They have no way to think logically. All they have is their grief. This text calls our attention to a gathering that gives evidence that the people who gather are from many nations and from many different backgrounds. They probably had different struggles and different issues. They probably articulated the same issue from opposite sides of the fence. But in this moment, with palm branches in hand, they are singing their worship songs to the Lamb and declaring victory, not over the one who did them wrong in life, but to the overcoming of the entire system of evil that has prevailed for so very long. Rome is no longer just a geographical location, but it represents the systems, the powers, and principalities against which we are called to stand in all of our daily living. All of the systems that have oppressed people will then come down. All of the institutions that have failed us will come down. All of the wrong thinking that has led us to think that our brother is our enemy will come down. All of the places and spaces where we try to do good from within will come down. And at last, the saints will see that God's promise was true after all. And for the saints who are gathered this morning, who want to stand strong in our faith, who want to see this come to pass, who want to see a better world, do not be afraid to ask the question, because God is strong enough to hear your question. So I will pose the question on our behalf. We understand that the time is coming. We understand that it will pass. We understand this is how you have written the end of the story. But God, how long will we have to wait? How long will we persevere? How long, oh God, will we be in this place? How long, oh God, will we remember? How long until we see that it is finally the great and last ordeal? How many more ordeals must we endure, oh God? And in the silence, God calls us not to craft our own answer, but God crafts us to be in community, to ask the question, to ask the hard question that comes without an answer. And that is the third way that we live into the expectation in the text. We remember that we are not in this journey alone. This is why we gather. We gather because even when we ask God the hard questions and it seems like it's taking God a long time to answer, we agree to wait, but we wait together. And while we are together, we encourage one another. This is why we gather. This is why we sing our beautiful songs of Zion. This is why we continue to pray the prayers of the people. This is why we sing even when our faces have to be masked and we have to gather on screens. This is why we say the names of those who have gone before, so that as we recall their lives, we recall their testimonies, we recall their troubles, but we recall their witness in the world. They may not be as famous as Sean Connery. They may not have had as much of an impact on the church as Katie Geneva Cannon, but we call their names because they remind us that the church is as ancient as the evil that is posed against it. But the church stands. The church has an end that is already written, and we only have to live into it. The church stands against the evil. And in the end, what we hear is he will rejoice over you. We will stand together robed in our witness in a global congregation with those we once thought were our enemies, but we find are actually our siblings. We will stand together singing and proclaiming salvation belongs to our God who is seated on the throne and to the Lamb. This is not the kind of king sitting on a throne who sees us as weak and subjects who merely have to give that God all of our gold and all of our offerings. This is a God who sees us as kinfolks, who sees us as loved ones, who sees us not in a hierarchical kingdom, but in a kingdom where there is plenty, a kingdom where there is love, a kingdom where we are all sitting side by side with nothing else to do but worship the one who has brought us together and who has brought us through. Until we get to that day, until we get to the end of the story, until we get to the end that is promised, we must live our lives with the turning of every page. For sure, for some, this is a great tribulation, but this is not the last. We live our lives in community, and we encourage one another to resist the seduction of the world. We encourage one another to boldly proclaim with our words, with our deeds, with our hospitality, and with our generosity that Jesus is Lord. Even on Tuesday, some will worry, some will gloat, some will sulk, and some will lose no matter who wins. We, the people of God, the ones who have chosen to follow Christ, will stand as witnesses that no matter how the election turns out, no matter how our days and our weeks turn out, God has already determined how the larger story goes, and our parts are already scripted. And the script is this: love one another as I have loved you. That will be our mark on the world while we are still in it. That is the work of the saints. That is how we will stand apart. That is how we will stand until the very last day. That is what marks us as the saints of God. So until we get to the place where the page is turned and we all stand in our robes and we stand worshiping the Lamb of God at the throne on that very last day, until the last day, stand where you are, robed in God's righteousness, clothed in the love of God, extending that love to all who come your way, resisting the seduction of the world that promises everything but offers nothing. Stand in the salvation of God, God who promises everything and delivers every single way. This is the God who will rejoice over you when you stand to the very last day. Thanks be to God.